Blog Talk Radio.
My cell phone doesn't work. My land phone is working.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, you have an issue to quarrel with me because you haven't been answering your phone. But that's for later on in the hour. McGregor, you and I are going to have a very good discussion because the one we had 30 minutes ago, let me acknowledge the others before I'm told, oh, you only chose to say hello to men. yeah, no. Miss Eric, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad. How is California?
It's great. Happy Easter.
Great. Happy Easter to you. Happy Easter. And how is Missouri, Miss Lucas?
Fine, thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. Okay, now everyone. Yeah, those who are going to come late, we are not going to say hi. I just wanted to be even with everybody. McGregor, like I've said always on this show, Bridging the Gap, what we are trying to achieve here is possibly to find out how much talent we have. Who are the people who are living in the diaspora? Who belongs to Zambia? What can Zambia benefit from our own people? So part of the education, you and I may agree, just landing here, you start to learn a lot of things. Going to McDonald's, you learn one or two things. Life in general, you learn one or two things. Going to school, healthcare, everything. So we want just to capture, so to say. So, Machingwe, how long have you, when did you come to the United States of America?
I came to the U.S. in 97, so, you know, I went
You're
to school.
Veteran.
I'm a veteran, yeah. I've been around for a little bit, you know, so, yeah. So, yeah, and, you know, I went to school here, and then I started working for this brokerage company, so,
I've been working
here for, like, about... I'll probably say like 13 years now. So,
We came in 1998. 1 year when you just arrived. I think most people came. There was this part of time frame, so to say, when a lot of Zambia, we ran away from Zambia. It was rough. This period, 97 and 2000, a lot of people, it was very, very rough in Zambia. The mines, if you remember, for us who belong to the Copper Belt, the mines were closing, and you know, things just became tough. Anglo-American had just left, so people had to find something to do. Before we come to your life here, coming to the United States, in Zambia, from Facebook, tells me you're a Copper Belt person. You come from Kitwe. Oh, from Dola.
Exactly, yeah. Dola.
Okay, so are you in Dola, born and raised, Copper Belt guy?
Well, yeah, I was in Dola up to my high school, and then I went to David Kaunda, so, you know, and I started work in Lusaka. So I'm kind of partly Dola, partly Lusaka, you know. So.
I see. Okay,
yeah.
So you went to David Kaunda for school. Okay.
Yeah, for school. But I also worked in Lusaka for quite a bit before I came to the U.S., yeah.
And your coming here, was it just one of those comings like some of us who just packed their luggage, America will go sort it out, or you had sponsorship?
Now, what happened is that my brother was here already, so...
Your brother was here?
Yeah. And, you know, he's married to an American, so they kind of sponsored me to come over. So, it was like, you know, coming for school, so to say,
yes.
And then, you know, transitioning to... Yeah.
Okay, so that... Yeah.
No,
yeah. When you come that way, one day I'll be able to tell my own story, Achingwe. When you come that way, you have someone to receive you. Life can be much, much easier.
Exactly.
Some of us, we just packed our luggage. We are going to America. Where are you going? I don't know. But all I know is I'm going to America.
Yeah.
And for sure, we arrived in America and made it. In Zambia, you were in Lusaka. By this time, you were still not married. You were working, or you just
alone? I was working for Ministry. As a matter of fact, I was working for Ministry of Finance.
Oh.
And there was this, a project called the HIID, Harvard Institute for International Development. So I was involved in computerizing the, tax department.
Yes.
It was the VAT, the VAT system, and, Ascoda, and also the part of the customs and exercise, so, you know.
Also, you've always been an IT guy. It's not that you bought it from here.
Oh, no. Since Zambia, I've been in the IT industry, so I've been around for a while. So, definitely.
Okay. So, even when we're going to talk about your profession, you had a good grasp of IT in terms of being able to compare what the Zambian friends were going through in as far as technology is concerned, and comparing the American way. You had that opportunity to do that then.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's such on a grand scale, you can't really make any comparisons, you know.
Yes, yes.
We have ways to go, you know. So, I'm just waiting for that opportunity to be able to offer, you know, some of, the things that we have learned from here, and, you know, try to infuse those skills in Zambia. But again, there's so many hurdles we have to go through. So.
Yes. We shall keep making that noise until we have that window. Probably this is what we started bridging the gap. In Indola, where did you go to school?
I went to Consensus Secondary School. I went to Consensus Secondary School, and then from there, that's when I went to DK.
To DK.
Yeah.
Have you been home of late?
I was home in 2010. I was just there for like 3 weeks, which was like you know, such a struggle to get back on my job, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying.
I almost lost my job, you know, because, you know, they could not allow me to go for 3 weeks.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
You have to come up with all sorts of stories just to
exactly.
go on.
Exactly.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And for and most of us, a week is just for travel, you know, before you can even talk about visiting people. 1 week is just dedicated to traveling. Yeah.
Exactly.
Any contacts with your former school?
You know what? At one point, I remember, like, maybe probably like 5 years ago, I did try to make attempts to contact my school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, talk to, like, one person. But since then, I haven't had any contact, you know, so.
Okay.
Kind of lost contact. Yeah.
Like I went to Mukuba, I don't think I've ever. Those who are listening live and those who have called in, we've made little adjustments to our program suggestions coming from our listeners. The interview might be like for like 40 minutes or so, and then you will come in, not to ask questions, but maybe to contribute to some of the aspects you would have picked from the interview, one or two, and we see how we go over there. Okay. Enough with our Zambian story. So in 1997, the application was made while you were in Zambia, I presume.
Yeah,
for college.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And which school did you go to in United States?
I actually, you know, first studied with a community college.
Okay.
It's actually in Lincroft, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I went to a CUNY school in the city, actually in the Bronx, you know.
Okay.
And then I'm currently working on my master's at Pace University, so.
Okay, that's
yeah.
that's mm-hmm. great. Some of us, I hope those who are listening will be able to listen to this interview. Back home, those who are back home, this is a very good formula you used, Bachingwe, which some of us never had the opportunity to do. When you come to the United States, you go straight to a high university, very expensive, and then you start cutting in between. This semester you are in school, this semester you are out. And those who were coming after us, we gave them, we advised them. It was much easier to go to a community college. You do your 2 years or whatever, and then you are high up there. Then you are established in America a little bit. You are raising a little bit of money. Then you go to a higher university. Did you
mm-hmm.
find this transition better to work with? Or probably you don't know the other one, that it's very rough when you just
start. No.
Yeah.
No, you know, I see. Again, you know, I had the privilege of working with my brother, so
yes,
he kind
yes.
of gave me all the pointers, you know. And,
yes, yes.
you know, of course, like you mentioned, you know, it was much, much easier to go to a community college first and then, you know, transition to a bigger university. So, yeah, definitely, you know.
In 1997, when you came, was this your first time to be in the United States?
No, yeah, that was my first time. Yeah, definitely.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. That was.
Yeah, you know, I thought everything was planted in God, you know, but was a rude awakening, you know.
I know. It's a whole different world.
Yeah.
Excuse me. It's a whole different world when you are when you just land. But you're landing. You've arrived. I presume JFK. Anything going through your head at this time, if you can remember that far, like 15 years ago?
Yeah, you know, the only one thing that like really happened, you know, because I was in transit through Athens, so my itinerary was through Athens and then coming
yes.
over to the US. So in Athens, I was held up, you know, because apparently they thought there was something wrong with my visa,
you know.
Yes.
They ran through their scanner, and, you know, it kind of, actually, this guy just eyeballed the visa, and he said, no, something is wrong with your, you know, we need to validate this. So I was held up in Athens for, like, several hours, like, you know, somebody from the consulate in Athens had to come over to validate my visa, you know. And,
from the U.S. consulate?
Yeah, from the U.S. consulate in Athens.
Wow.
You know? Yeah, so, you know, like, I was, like, freaking out, you know.
Of course,
and,
of course.
I was busy calling my brother, Claude Chingwe, in New Jersey, and, you know, telling him what was going on, and, you know, they were calling, you know, the embassies and all that, you know, just like, you know, because I'm, you know, I was my first time to travel, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
abroad, you know, and, you know, I was just really freaking out. So, but anyway, it was sorted out, and then when I got to JFK, I mean, you know, of course, I found my brother waiting for me, and it was, of course, in the winter, you know, and I didn't have any proper, you know, clothing, so... Luckily enough, my brother brought, you know, a heavy jacket.
He knew how the Zambian was going to come.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, those are like some of the things I remember. But,
Those things probably never goes away. What were your first impression of school? You go to the college. What was your first impression?
Well, I mean, I honestly, I found it really, really, I don't know whether this is, you know, wise to say, but I found it easy, seriously, because the stuff that we did at DK was much, much, much more challenging than, you know,
yes.
What was being offered at this community college. So, like, I did my 2-year college, the community college, in 1.5 years. I was done, and you know, I started working like within 2 weeks after my graduation. So that was really exciting. So
if you know people are listening in Zambia, school in North America, either in Canada, it's not meant to be stressful. Well, it can be stressful time for exams, but not in our terms, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
You know, they make it so hard, you know, you have to bury yourself in books, but here they make it fun, like, you know,
exactly.
Like you're not doing anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, so,
I think and you know, probably when we have a forum for this kind of talk about education, maybe we can really, you know, kind of, you know, tap on that, because our education system in Zambia, I mean, we really have to, you know, rethink the whole, you know, curriculum, because you know, like, you know, we have all these different stages of how somebody has to proceed to the next grade. They have to, you know, pass the exams and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, not all those, you know, kids, I guess, you know, are down that they can't proceed to the next grade, you know. So, I mean, you can only imagine how many people out there have been left behind only because they didn't proceed to the to go to the next grade, you know. You know, I really feel like, you know, we really should revise those, you know, kind of, you know, educational system. I mean, it's just not right, honestly, you know. But, you know, I mean, in a way, you know, some of us benefited, but I feel like these guys out there and girls, of course, that have been left behind.
I really agree with you, Bachingwe. I agree with you. And this, for the last a month or so, this has been my, I don't know if I can call it my national anthem, how a nation like ourselves, grade 7, when the kids write grade 7, I think we are talking about 12-year-old kids, 13-year-old kids. Dr. Patrick is here. I was talking to him about it. Age 12, age 13. You tell this kid that he has failed to go to grade 8, and therefore is not supposed to be in school, go away from school.
Yeah.
What is a 12-year-old kid going to do?
Exactly.
And how have we found this acceptable? But that's for another day. Like
I know, and that's what I said.
Like you have rightly said. But just a little bit on education again, on schoolwork. Our system of study back home, Majingwe, is you cram the whole year and you write one exam in December. The system of giving you bits and pieces, so if you like, one chapter, two chapters, you write a test, you have a quiz. How did you find that one comparing to our system?
Yeah, definitely. You know what? That's a much, much better system, okay? Because, I mean, think about it, you know. Let's say, for instance, you go through the entire textbook, okay? And at the end of the year, that's when you write the final exam. I mean, you know, it's almost impossible to remember most of the stuff in the textbook. So, you know, when I went to this college, you know, what we used to do is, like, I think, you know what, it was various subjects, but, you know, like, most of them, it was like, after every chapter, you write, you know, some kind of a quiz, you know, and all those, you know, quizzes and tests accumulate over the semester, you know. So, and, you know, that constitutes your final grade. And also the attendance, you know,
yes.
If you attend classes, I mean, you know, that's part of the whole, you know, curriculum, you know. So you have to factor in all these different elements, you know. So it's just not like, you know, somebody just passing the exam and, you know, you award them the results and stuff. I mean, you have to consider every single aspect of the learning, you know. So, and, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
It's such a great system, honestly. I mean, I really wish that, you know, the Zambian government can consider
some of these things. Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember just writing grade seven exam in Mindolo Kito, where I was raised up. I had to go in the bush, Wachingwe, for hours, seated with
books. Oh my God!
In the bush. Our time was very, very limited, as you can see. Time is flying. I came to America. My workplace, my first job, as most of us, is probably for you, maybe not, was in McDonald's. How do you, where do you place yourself?
Yeah. So, you know, Roger, you know, I was so lucky. I mean, at the time that I finished college, you know, so I finished college in, like, you know, mid-1998, okay? So it was like July. And, you know, that's when there was this, the e-commerce, you know, the dot-com bubble, you know, you know, that's when the, like, jobs were so abundant, you know? Mm-hmm. So after my graduation from college, it took me 2 weeks to find a job, and right in the city, in Manhattan, you know? And, I mean, I was so lucky, okay? And ever since, I've been with the same company, you know? At one point, I did try to resign. I think that was the 2007. And, you know, the company, I guess, you know, are happy with my services. So if they offered me more money, so I stayed, you know? So, you know, but I feel like I'm one of the, you know, a few lucky people out there that, you know, really benefited from the dot-com bubble. So,
yeah. So while going to school, you never had the opportunity to do some work aside?
Well, yeah, there's been a few times people have asked me to develop websites for them, and a few websites for people, but not really like on a vast scale, you know. I mean, I've done you know, personal websites for people also. I mean, you know, just like as a hobby, nothing.
Again, like you put it, you are one of the lucky few. A lot of us, it was a life and survival at the same time. You had to find yourself at work. That money gave you enough to pay for your rent and everything. and a little bit to go and pay for your school. Change in food, did it affect you in any way? Or we had read enough of McDonald's and or fast food, so it wasn't the problem to adjust
You know, I see in the beginning, I was kind of going crazy on the McDonald's and stuff. You know, you just get so excited. You never
I know.
You know, we had so much of Shiman, you know. It was about time to kind of, you know, make a switch over. But, you know,
about
course,
time
like,
to eat some American food.
Yeah. But, you know, the funny thing is that after a few years, you see that, you know, you're gaining some extra pounds, and you're like, you know what, I gotta watch myself, you know. So, you know,
yeah.
I quit eating, you know, the McDonald's.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you have to mind your health and all that. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Finally, as you look at Zambia, you look at Lusaka and everything, and America. Any confusion in your head, or things were just really coming together, other than looking on the wrong side of the road when you are crossing the road?
Well, you know, there's several aspects to that. You know, you know, first of all, I mean, of course, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I thought that, you know, everything was plated in gold and everything, you know. But, you know, when I came to this country, of course, that wasn't the case, you know.
Yeah,
So, you know, I mean, there's advantages to both sides of the coin, you know. You know, I know that, you know, I just realized the level of, you know, racism here in North America, so to say, you know. Until I came here, like, you know, that's when, you know, it just dawned on me, like, okay, you know, it's a whole different ballgame here, you know, you really have to adjust, you know. I mean, we know we get all excited going to America, not knowing that there's this whole different aspect of, you know,
of life
and the association of, you know. But, you know, at the same time, you could equate this to, you know, how we have tribalism in the, you know, in Zambia. I mean, you know, it's basically a different way of, you know, just, you know, looking at, you know, the different economic standards in, you know, of people. So, you know, I mean, that's just, you know, on the side. But, you know, of course, there's other things. And, you know, I mean, someone can be able to find a job, you know. It's a lot easier to find a job here than back home.
Yeah,
and,
of course,
you know. So, yeah, there's advantages and disadvantages to everything, you know. So
That's very... that's very true, actually. That's very, very, very true. In every angle you can look at, there'll be advantages, there'll be disadvantages. Those who are listening to us, we are live on Zambia Block Talk Radio, speaking to Mr. Gregory Chingwe of Westchester, New York. And we are on Zambia Bridging the Gap program. We are going to see what aspects of his life now we can go into that, where we can pick one or two things which we think our motherland, from a person like Mr. Chingwe, we can benefit from. After setting down 2-3 years, you are getting settled and everything. By the way, I don't know if this is a question or what. We all have family back home. A big family back home, like me?
I have a big family, yeah.
Yeah,
There's actually, there are 10 of us in my family. Well, we used to be 10. One passed, my brother.
Yes.
My brother. Yeah, so there was five girls. There are five girls, and we are four boys, you know.
Yes,
So I have my brother here in New Jersey. And I have a sister in two sisters in South Africa, and then I have one of my the last born is in Namibia, with the University of Namibia, UNAM, and then the rest of the siblings are in Zambia.
Zambia. Okay.
Yeah.
I asked you that question when I went to Zambia for the first time. I think in 14 years I've been out. Well, last year, then I found, oh my goodness, my sisters have children and their children have children. Oh God, I've got so many nieces, you can't believe it.
I know. Yeah.
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 But it was. In 1997, you come, 1998, 99, as far as politics is concerned in the United States, we are in the midst of Bill Clinton impeachment. I don't know if you paid a lot of attention to that.
Yes, of course I did. I mean... You know, the thing is that I love Bill Clinton so much, you know.
Yes.
Even after, you know, like, even if all that stuff was going on, I still just wanted him to be the president, you know.
Yes.
He's such a great leader, you know.
Yes.
He really helped, you know, the U.S., you know, in that sense. So it was just like, very unfortunate that, you know.
But how politically aware were you before you came to here? Because it's like every person who has come to the United States, we become so politically, in as far as Zambia is concerned, less than we were back home. Do you think your awareness of politics as far as Zambia is concerned was just as much, or you think you got more aware of our politics when you came here?
I think I got more aware. And, you know, I think the main thing is the media. You know, the media kind of really, you know, steers you in a certain direction. And, you know, if you're not really careful making your own judgments, you know, you can really go a different route. So, yeah, definitely. I mean, I became more into, like, you know, politics and, you know.
Now, when we compare the systems of government, therefore, the system of government from home and to here. I mean, there's just one thing which really I loved about the United States, about seeing how states are governed and how the federal is government. Did you find that intriguing to you?
Of course, I did. I mean, you know, the thing is that it's I don't know whether it's a fair, you know, comparison. I mean,
yes.
No. You know, it's, you know, I mean, these guys have 200 years of,
of freedom, yes.
Yeah, I mean, we I don't know whether we can even make a comparison. I mean, our, you know, our history is very, very, you know, it's
very small.
It's in its infancy. So we have a lot to learn, you know, and, I really feel like, you know, but again, it offers an opportunity for so many of us to be able to explore all the different, you know, aspects of, you know, investment in Zambia, you know, only if, you know, again, you know, it all comes to the same thing, the whole thing of dual citizenship, you know, if all that can be opened up for, you know, the people out in the diaspora, I mean, things might start, you know, looking good in Zambia. So
yes. Just staying on that a little bit. The intriguing part which I found was how much a state, Abachingwe, is able to direct its own development, so to say, before even the federal government can come in. And probably it was from that time I even hated Lusaka so much, because of central government is based in Lusaka. All the development is being done in Lusaka. The copper belt where we come from, where all the copper was coming from, was being neglected while all the money is being sent in Lusaka. And then I said to myself, how only I wish if this kind of system, real power, people can have real power in Kitwe, real power in the copper belt, maybe we could have some different levels of development in our nation.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, this explains why, you know, the Western province is so mad about how that whole
thing. Yes, and I support them.
We have to rethink the way, you know, our government works, you know, because, you know, even just the basics, you know, are not, you know, functional, you know, and it's just so sad, you know.
It is sad, you know. Mm-hmm. At one point we were doing a Zambian district. You find a whole district of Umpolokoso, 200 plus people, they have no gas station. They have to travel like from Kitwe to Kapirimposhi to go and find a nearest gas station in Kasama.
Yeah.
And I live in a small town here, 20,000 people. You can't count how many. Yes, we can't compare the two, but at least 200,000 should have something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, you know, we have ways to go. And, you know, I mean, there's just so many things that we can talk about. But I'm looking at this time span here. We just don't have the time to talk about so many.
Oh, yes. We may not end on this one, but let me just I'll talk about the internet and last, but just healthcare, your experience and your thoughts being here and seeing at our own people in Dollar General Hospital, like for some of us who come from Kitwe Central Hospital, if you went to UTH to UTH, now you come to United States. One of the things that I've seen over here, even before we can talk about money, it is how much the nurses, the doctors, care for you. You know, the way they talk to you, the way they treat
exactly.
you.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, what was your experience? Did you ever even think about these things? Or today, if you were to reflect on this, what you said, what did you say on that?
Well, you know, I mean, despite all the, you know, the kind of problems that there is in, you know, in the healthcare, you know, they have such a good system here. I mean, you know, I remember in Zambia, I never used to go for like a physical, you know, I don't remember going for a physical, you know, so they definitely have a better system here. And, you know, there's, you know, there's so many ways of, you know, just kind of exploring the different elements of the healthcare system. So it's a totally different, you know, because they have for each different, you know,
element of the body.
Yeah, you know,
there's
like
a doctor for it.
Exactly, you know.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And maybe it's just been I've been out of Zambia for too long, and you know, I just don't remember. But you know,
I don't know, because you know, Bachengwe, I remember in Kitwe we had one place where we used to go for dental clinic. Paranabout,
yeah.
Those who are from Kitwe, Paranabout. One doctor or two, three doctors for dentist. And then I go to Delaware, there is a doctor for the teeth. There are so many doctors, that's for teeth.
I know, yeah.
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 You know,
someone
just cleans teeth. This one is for root canal, this one is for this one. Just for teeth, there are so many doctors, and they have offices. Yeah.
I know. I mean, you see, even the medication of how, you know, everything is so valid, and, you know, because in Zambia, from what I remember, it was more like a dumping place for all this medication, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you might be taking medication, and, you know, it's probably expired and all that, but, you know, the system here, they have all these different, you know, checks and balances, you know, which we really don't have in Zambia, you know. And, you know, all these different aspects of, you know, the whole system, just makes it easier for people, because you're basically doing it for the citizens of, you know, of, you know, the country, or, you know, Zambia or whatever, U.S., you know. So, you know, it just makes it so easy for people, you know.
Yes.
But in Zambia, it's more like, you know, you owe someone, you know. But, you know, the government, you know, so, this is your duty as the government. You have to offer these services to the people of Zambia, you know. You know. So,
but
you are treated
like, you know, you are not even sick, you know, you are just lying here, what and what, you know, you don't just
exactly.
want to go to work.
Exactly. Like you mentioned, like sometimes the nurses will even scream at you, you know.
Oh, yeah, sometimes.
But, you know.
It's an everyday thing.
You know,
you know
I mean. Yeah.
Attitudes of the nurses is, it's not something we really need to spend money on. We just need to tell, hey, these are your people. You know, when they come here, they need your help. We need your humble heart, your patient heart. You know, the way you were trained. This is one message. If there is one message, I think we are going to be sending even from this program. You know, we don't need money for the nurse to be nice to the patient.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And with our lack of medicines in the hospital, a smiling nurse can have a whole different effect on a patient.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I was really disappointed when I went to UTH the last time I was in Zambia. I mean, you know, the place still looks the same, and you know, people are on the floor and all that. I mean, it's just like, oh my God, I just don't believe this. Seriously.
Mm.
Like, you know, there was no change at all, you know. And I don't know. It's just like, you know, what is the government doing, honestly, you know? I mean, you know, at one point that I remember, he, you know, when he was a governor then, I think he did try to do a few things, change a few things here and there. And he did seem to work, but, he, you know, it was not sustained, you know. And you know, it's just so disappointing. Like we are going backwards instead of going forward.
Of going ahead. That's very true. We'll end on and this is your main area. Unfortunately, we'll end after 2-3 minutes on it. That way,
okay.
Dr. Musanje doesn't say no. You've gone beyond your time. You are an IT person, Vachingwe. One aspect which I have seen, again, you before the show we were talking, how much you have to go to Lusaka, line up for the internet cafe. In the meantime here, if you don't have your computer working, they are there in the library, the computers, in the computer labs at school, they are just about everywhere. The question is, how much are we lagging behind because of lack of access to things like the internet? We might not put it in value terms, in money, but how much are we being pushed away from the rest of the world as a result of this?
Well, you know, honestly, we are so far behind. I mean, you know, we just have to accept it, okay?
Yes.
But again, you know, it's not like, you know, this is a dead end, you know, there's nothing else we can do. You know, this, as a matter of fact, is like, you know, it's a beginning of technology, you know, and, you know, it's up to us to be able to kind of open up our markets and, you know, be able to compete on a global, you know, basis. So, you know, we are definitely, you know, lagging, but you know, we can, and again, everything comes down to this whole thing of you know, having dual citizenship, because
yes,
there's so many Zambians out there in the diaspora that are willing to be able to help out, you know in the technology sector, you know.
Yes.
But all these obstacles of, you know, dual citizenship and all that just makes it so hard for so many of us, you know. And, you know, there's so many things we want to do, okay? just not too long ago, I was talking to a friend of mine, and, you know, we saw this article about, you know, this project was that was being done to one of the ministries. I think they were trying to computerize. And, you know, my friend and I were like, you know, we can do this. You know, this is stuff
yes.
that we specialize in, you know. But again, all these obstacles of the dual citizenship and stuff, you know, it just makes it so hard, you know.
Yes.
And so, I mean, you know, the thing is that the Zambian government really has to open up the market, you know, for, you know, not just like foreign investors. You know, I'm talking of Zambians in the diaspora that should be able to come home and be able to, you know, invest in technology and, you know,
yes.
and, you know. It's just going to make such a big difference, you know.
Yes.
You know, I mean, most people are dying to do these kind of things, you know. So it's up to the Zambian government to be able to open up the markets for you know, for the, you know, the people in the diaspora.
Okay, okay. So
yeah.
That was Mr. Gregory Chingwe, who is in Westchester, New York, giving us just part of his story. We haven't looked at a lot of things. We wanted to look at housing, water distribution, road networks, legal systems, all those things we haven't looked at. But let me allow those on the call maybe just to help us pick one or two things. Imagine this was a case study given to you. What have you picked from there? Ladies first, I'm told all the time. I should remember, if not, to be in trouble. So let's go to California. Miss Yareka, your comments on Mr. Chingwe's submission today.
Can you give me a few seconds? Because I'm just attending to something. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay.
Thanks.
Click one when you are ready, and then I'll come back to you. Dr. Musanje.
Yeah.
If you are not watching Mad Madness.
No, I'm actually listening to this program. I was very impressed to hear from Mr. Chingwe on his experiences living here in the United States. He mentioned a number of things that. Obviously, I have also experienced, for example, we people who live from Zambia, we have no idea what really racism is. I remember reading a lot what is apartheid those days when there was the apartheid. I had to study and try to memorize it so that I can pass the exam. But I really didn't understand it until I went to Europe. That's where I found people who are not happy that I was black. So this is the one thing that Mr. Chingwe talked about, having come here. But there's a way that we survive such kind of things. For example, people who are racists here, they usually say that, no, you are taking away their jobs. But if you are qualified, America is still the best place for you to be promoted or to get your position without being a lozi or a bemba or a tonga. Nobody's going to look at that. So I really appreciate. So the only thing that we can do to survive is what Mr. Chingwe himself has done, go to school and earn something that will give you a decent job.
Okay, okay. What aspect of our discussion do you think we can take home?
Is that for me?
Yes, yes, it's still for you. What I want people, I think, to give is what aspects of our discussion you really think this is a message, this is a knowledge we would like to send back home?
Yeah, the general discussion, the way it was going, I think that is something that we would like people back home to emulate. For example, he talked about our nurses being arrogant. As you said yourself, we don't need the foreign exchange to be for our nurses to be very kind and just smiling. You know, just a smile can heal a patient, even when there is no medicine.
So
I think that is something that we can take home.
I agree with you. We have welcomed Walukuku came into the discussion as we went. But let me go to Pennsylvania. Daniel, some of the things we are agreeing to, you are like, yes. That point, I like it in Zambia better.
I like it in Zambia better. I don't know if I can I just answer one more thing before I go to that, Roger?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
When you ask the brother about getting involved in the politics when he came to the United States.
Yes.
And, you know, like for me, just speaking for myself, you know, my background is very, very, very poor. When I got here, see how people that were treated, like especially foreigners, I know we touched a little bit about racism and stuff like that. There was a lady from Congo. She just got here. She couldn't speak English, and someone was helping her. And then she said, no, they can't force you to do this. Go back. You have to work and, you know, you have to and study at the same time. Then I look at it and said, man, this is an American who's telling an African. She can't even speak English. And she's not even looking like them, you know, but they're telling her, you have to, they can't force you to do this, you know. So she went and helped her until she finished school, then she went, you know, all those kind of things that I hope our people and our government, they can study to see, like, these guys, you know, some of us came here with nothing. And the freedom and the way we're expressing ourselves, all the programs like, you know, we had on Zambia Block Talk Radio from Australia, from that lawyer was coming in. And they, if they can tell by the tone of our voices, by the way we are speaking and see the changes, and they can ask them themselves, as a study, you know, why our people, you know, they were like this, now look how they are because of, you know...
The environment they find themselves.
The environment they find themselves. And some of us, if we are in Zambia, we are not mounted to, we are not mount to anything, you know. Like for me, one day some people that will hear my story, have never benefited from any government in the world. But if I was in Zambia, I don't think I would have got to be where I am today. With the people I've touched on this, Roger, you know, the people, we don't share ancestries, we don't share skin color, we don't share nothing, you know, but all my neighbors are different colors, but our freedom, I get up, I can get up in the middle of the night, I can do, have my own struggling trucking business, you know, and I hope our people can see that. And let me just share. And one thing that touches me, it's John Carney in Uganda, who's taking the children, you know. When the child came to America and sat in front of Congress, and the Congress said, young man, as the Congress will do anything to try to help you, Roger, tears came to my eyes, man. This congressman to say, young man, you know, but our people there, they're taking kids, no life, and putting them in the front line to fight, and the way they treat young people. But an American said, young man, would do anything this Congress can do to help you. That man, I said, it caused me to go read and study about racism. This is a white man telling that, you know. But
yeah.
if that boy came to Zambia, would have said, hey, you were fishu like kapa smapa monetkamba, you know.
They will not even listen to him. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We are not even listen to him.
I agree with you, but same way. I really do agree with you. And when you see how people, even the way we talked about the nurses, generally how people treat each other, be in the shop, even the cop, when he talks to you, he's saying, no, sir, no, this, you know, he's putting handcuffs on you, he's even saying, sir, and, you know, he's giving you that kind of respect.
And, Roger, you know, sometimes I have cases here in America, I go by myself in the courtroom. I don't want to be accompanied by anyone who's black. I go by myself, you know. So someday I can tell the people that look at the way you're supposed to represent
our
the law.
Okay.
I go by myself, you know.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Patrick, conclude for us, and then we will allow... Oh, Valuku here. I'll allow Dr. Patrick to conclude for us. But, Valukuku, any aspects, you were the second to present bridging the gap. You were the second. You gave us a very good vision, so to say, of your arrival in Canada. Anything you are picking up from Brother Gregory here?
Yeah, I came in when you were talking about assessments in class and all that. You know, continuous assessment being very good. So that's something that picked up that I think we should insist that it gets adopted, because it's a good way of assessing somebody, not on a final exam. That one, and then you touched the semi-autonomous provinces. I remember when we were discussing the constitution, that was something we talked about a lot. I don't know how that went, but I think some autonomous provinces would do well in fostering economic development. And then just coming to the healthcare thing, you have just touched on the cops. I think it's a culture that that permeates all different aspects of our lives. It's not only healthcare; it's everywhere. You know, I call it the capital syndrome. You know, everybody who has a little responsibility, they think, because, you know, now they don't have to do much. They just will be bossing people around. I know, you know, when I finished at the college, you know, in Zambia, and we got posted to provinces for just a short while, we were bragging that, my job was very good because I don't do much. You hear that?
Yes.
And, you know, I don't do much. You know, that's the attitude that now you have your education and now you can just kick back and relax. So that is the whole attitude. You know, when I went to Zambia, I went to the bank, lined up in a line, came to, you know, trying to cash my traveler's checks, came to the cashier. The cashier says, "Oh, Mr. Lukuku, we are not doing TCs today." You know. Why did I line up? Or, you know, like, they should just make a sign and say, "No, we are not doing traveler's checks." But you line up and go all the way and then to be told, "Oh, we are not doing TCs today." You know? So that kind of attitude, I mean, it's not only nothing. It's everywhere. I think it has to be maybe part of the curriculum, how to, you know, respect. I mean, how to serve. Literally, that's the word, how to serve. You know, crime. So that's one of the ones. The last one, of course, you talked about investing in Zambia and all that. You know, I just say Zambia should be more business friendly to the diaspora. You know, people.
Yes.
You know, they are not business friendly to us, and you know, that's the bottom line.
Okay. Okay. Let's hear from Dr. Patrick. He always gives us a good summary, and then we'll go into equal time. I hope most of us who have come here have something to say on equal time, something which has concerned you. I saw, Lukuku, you posted something about, I think, our president visiting China and how, you know, we should benefit from that. I have a very different view I'm going to be bringing to Eco Time. And probably you and me are going to debate this very, very fiercely. But Dr. Patrick, give us a summary before we go
yes.
to Jingwei.
Yes,
to
thank
our,
you
yes.
very much. I would like to join in the China discussion later on also. I had some thoughts on that. But in particular, you know me, Roger. I like to add balance to a conversation.
Yes.
And what I would like to say with respect to the health systems in the United States compared to health systems in Zambia, we must know and recognize that in Monzi District, we have the Lingwu School. We also have the Monzi Hospital, which
yes.
you have travelers from all over the nation, Zambia, as well as neighboring nations, for dentistry, for eyes, for chest. So we have a good hospital there. There's another hospital in the Monzi District, is the Chikuni Hospital, which is also recognized. So we have to keep that in mind. So whenever we speak of the United States or Canada or Europe, we should always compare it with the positive aspects that are going on in Zambia. And there are a lot. And I learned this from the wonderful district coverages that were provided by Zambia Blog Talk Radio. It would stand to reason that many in the diaspora know more about Zambia, the country, than our brothers and sisters in Zambia.
As a
direct result of us learning by the districts, what the districts are offering. Let me share an experience of blackness. Dr. Musanze talked about it, and Daniel talked about it, but I would like to talk about it in reverse. As a leader of teams, as well as a part of teams, we would travel to Europe. We would travel to Western Europe, of course, England, France, and then we would travel to Eastern Europe, Russia, and various other parts on the global community. And most of the time, I would be the only black in a team of experts that would go to these various countries to provide expert training in regulatory activities as well as standard activities. However, going to South Africa for the first time, I was in a delegation similar team delegation, and of course I was the only African American in the group, and the smile would come to my face.
Yes.
And this is the smile. In South Africa, everything was run by blacks.
Mm.
And you can imagine how proud that made me feel. Because now we're in an area where I'm saying our people are running things. Whereas opposed when you go to Europe, of course, our people aren't running things. So there's a pride that comes with going to a country that's run by blacks, run by Africans. So let's bear that in mind. And then finally, I would like to ask Brother Gregory this question. With respect to eating habits, now, Brother Gregory, you must have missed Zambian cuisines when you first got to Lincoln, New Jersey, and Westchester, New York. What did you do? Where did you seek that cuisine?
Well, you know, so the thing is that I kind of got to know some of my brothers and sisters. You know, Zambian brothers and sisters, you know. So I was able to kind of, you know, join, you know.
All right.
You know, yeah. Definitely. I mean, the Zambian dish you cannot compare with anything else, you know.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? So definitely, you know, I mean, of course, you know, it was just like the excitement coming to a foreign country and you just want to,
you know, sample out everything, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then,
uh-huh.
you know, later on you just, you know, decide that, you know what, this is not the way to go, you know. You gotta, you know, so, but, yeah, you know. you gotta try. Yeah.
That's all that I had to contribute.
Okay.
Thank you, Roger.
You know, talking about food, Dr. Patrick, I agree with Brother Chingwe here. You know, there is that excitement when you first come, and it evaporates just like in 2 weeks as far as food is concerned. It's
exactly.
gone, and
yeah.
you are homesick just next, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember
oh, yeah.
in Delaware going to every store to find corn meal. I couldn't
right.
find corn meal.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it was a terrible experience until very late, the population of the Hispanics started to increase in Delaware. You know, Delaware is a small, I would call it a small white state,
uh-huh.
not very ethnic people in there, especially in Dover where we live.
Yeah.
Then we had Hispanics coming, of course, with them. Small markets started to open up, and corn was there. So that's how we probably found ourselves. Food can be a challenge. I remember being
yeah.
in the UK without Inshima for a year. Probably that's why I was so depressed. Yeah,
you know what that means. You know what that means. It means that we
yeah.
have to open up some Zambian restaurants.
That's what it is.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
That's what
yeah.
it is. Well, that is our discussion on bridging the gap. Maybe we can import some food from home and bring it, bridge that gap. And
that sounds good to me.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
We'll take a short break. When we come back, Equal Time. I have a complaint to make about China taking over Africa. But Equal Time will be coming soon. Ephraim. Only God will help us. Now,
mm-hmm.
I'll ask the members of the panel here who are here, those who have something to say on Equal Time, to present on Equal Time, press one on your phone. That way I know you have something to say. I don't want to put you on the spot. In the previous discussions, I call people in advance whether they have something. So press one right now, and it's going to show on the phone that you are going to make a presentation on Equal Time. Okay? Like I said, I'll be probably the first one on Equal Time today to say something in the opening. And this is on China, the Chinese expansion in Africa. The question is whether the Chinese investment is good or bad. Probably others are going to say that. But my main worry is if China is bringing in, I've read a lot of articles, some are saying China probably has invested close, the Chinese are reporting 20 billion. But independent analysts are saying China is almost 100 million to 200 billion dollars is being invested in Africa. The question I'm trying to ask, probably answer even myself, is for what reasons are the Chinese doing this? Is it just for loving Africa, or do they have other intentions? Those other intentions, do we really need, as Africans, as Zambians, need to find out what those intentions are? Or are we going to find ourselves 10 years across along the way? Zambia is populated by only the Chinese and probably are even getting into the realms of power. Before we know it, we have lost all the power in our country. Those are some of the questions I'm asking. China has been known, for instance, in Zimbabwe, to be helping the Zimbabwean government oppress its own people. Of course, they've been also known to flip around when another government comes in. They also support the government in power. The Western world, when they come to help, probably they also influence our politics. I don't know whether that is good or not. So the question to the panelists today, which I want to look at, is China's investment in Zambia good or bad? Lukuku, you are at the first one because you commented on this.
No, actually, I didn't. I copied this from the Zambian discussion list.
Oh, I see.
Okay. I forwarded it to you, so you can give you some ideas of topics, and I'm glad you picked it up as a topic.
Yeah. Okay. No, I picked it up actually from you, and then I heard on the BBC, so I said, no, this has to be there. So, but what is your take, Makalamba?
My take is, the Chinese government the Chinese population is increasing, they are becoming more affluent, they need this, they need that, they need this and that. And to them, I think this is long-term strategy. Survival strategy. How can they assure the supply of raw materials or supply the and assure a market for their manufactured goods? I don't know if we have the same outlook. I don't think we are looking at it in the same way as a long-term strategy. I think to them it is. But is it good for us? It may be good for us in the long term, but we don't know what may ensue later on. We don't know how the Chinese operate. I mean, they built our railway. That's about it. But we don't really understand their psyche. We don't understand it. And I think we are trading very, very dangerous waters if we just make it open season. Which it seems from this article, they've invited the president to go to China and hobnob with him. And I know that we as Zambians, our Africans for that matter, we don't really drive a hard bargain. We tend to believe people at face value, and whatever they tell us, we think, oh yeah, this is good. But not we don't vet it. We have no mechanism to vet these things and see it and see what it is in real terms. So I think it may look good in the short term, but in the long term we have to find out what's the strategy, what's the motive behind this. I think that's the opening comment I would make.
Okay. Okay, Patrick, where do you have anything on this? Then I go to Dr. Patrick because he indicated he has something to say about this.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
This issue of China, I really think that, China has made the calculation, okay?
Yes.
They know that in the long term, they're going to benefit way more than, the locals, This is just my interpretation, Because there's no way they can be so persistent about being in Africa. I mean, basically all over the world. They are all over the world, So, they have done else, you know. But again, you know, we lack all the different resources to be able to, you know, kind of work around this, you know, because, you know, we are basically, you know, begging, so to say, you know.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. That's correct. That's correct. Okay. Okay, Dr. Patrick.
Let's see. With China's, let me begin by saying with what I believe China's intentions are, and it's a combination of quite a few things. The first thing, and I always use the example, the Angola example. I was at a conference in Washington, D.C., in the Ronald Reagan building, and the topic of discussion had to do with investing in Africa. And one of the presenters pointed to a representative from the Embassy of Angola. And they said, well, Angola, there's a lot of Chinese investment in Angola. And the question was, why not have the United States firm invest in Angola? Why not have the United States interest invest in Angola? So the representative from the embassy sat there and listened to it, and then he got an opportunity to respond, and his response was simple and to the point. He said, if the United States is not willing to invest in Angola, and China is, why not?
Right.
That was very powerful. Now, with respect to China's intentions, as everyone knows, China has a growing population. It's growing exponentially. So, therefore, there's a need for employment. The way China can employ their population is by obtaining work in other countries, specifically in Africa. You can employ Chinese in Africa by building projects. China also has a tendency of, when they are building a project, you will note that there's only Chinese building that project.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the United States, when a construction, if a building goes up and it's being built and owned by Chinese, you have the building of that structure is by Chinese. If you go throughout African countries, if you see a construction being built, a bridge or a building, it is being built by Chinese. The local community will be hired to do menial jobs. But as far as the major jobs, that is built and hired by Chinese that are imported from China to do this work. With respect to resources, China also needs a great deal of resources, whether it be mineral or agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
When AGOA came on board, there was the competition of textiles. So, of course, no one can compete with China when it comes to textiles. But no one can compete with Africa when it comes to agriculture. So if you want agriculture and you have a booming community, a booming population, where do you get agriculture? You go to Africa. Africa for China will be the food basket. Africa for the global community will be the food basket. The question now is, who's going to own the food basket? So if you have investment and moving into various parts of African countries and you have the ownership of it, such as tea, such as grain, wheat, then you will have a major interest in the food basket. So that's another consideration that China is looking at. Another example is when China sends an individual or scientist to operate and instruments such as a gas chromatograph or high-pressure liquid chromatography instrument. These are instruments used to detect certain levels of organisms or certain levels of minerals or certain levels of particulates in foods. The Chinese will have the expert work on the instrument. He or she will be conducting that research. It was an example in Uganda. You had a very expensive instrument that was worked on and operated by a Chinese professor, Chinese scientist. He would not let any Ugandan work on that instrument. Mm. After the research was done, he left and he said, "You can have the instrument." No one knew how to operate that instrument, but the Chinese scientist had conducted what he needed to do and performed what he needed to do, and he was gone. Another thing is inferior products. China standards, and this is one of the main reasons why African countries look toward the United States for products. The United States have set standards and regulations on the different type of foods and the different type of products. China do not have those type of standards. So therefore, if you purchase from China, you won't have or receive equivalent standards on many of the products as they are to the United States. So yes, you will buy products, and it would be less expensive, but yes, it would have an inferior component to it. And then the final thing is language. If Chinese go to Zambia to work on a project, and the project is going to take 4 years to complete, let's say they're going to build a hydroelectric dam, or let's say they're going to build a bridge to replace the pontoon bridges, and it's going to take 4 years to do that. By the second year, the Chinese workers will speak fluent Bemba. This is different than if you had a United States team going there to work on a particular project. They will speak English and continue to speak English for the duration that they're there. Chinese will infuse themselves into the culture. They'll speak Bemba, Loji, any language that's necessary that they would be kin to know of the culture. And that takes time, and that takes an appreciation of culture. And, of course, if you do that, you're welcome into the country. I went to Senegal, and I went to a seafood producing facility, and the top managers were Chinese. And the top managers spoke fluent French, even more better than the French that were there. So,
wow.
So these considerations have to be looked at. And then my final point is, on March the 30th, a couple of days past, President Obama met with five leaders of four small African democracies. It's Cape Verde, Malawi, Senegal, and Sierra Leone. Cape Verde, Portuguese-speaking, Malawi, English, Senegal, French, and Sierra Leone, English. The point to this is, out of the four countries that I mentioned, one, Senegal, there was an AGOA conference.
Right.
Cape Verde and Malawi and Sierra Leone received Millennium Challenge compacts. MCC compacts from the United States. Zambia has hosted an AGOA conference. Zambia is receiving a Millennium Challenge compact. Now, the question is, why are these countries and not Zambia? And that is our purpose. Our purpose is to, and what I do whenever I go to a conference or when I set up a meeting, I speak of Zambia and I speak of Angola. And when I speak of these two countries, people begin to think about these countries, put it on the page. So one of the things that's necessary, I think, is to have, and I don't think Zambia has this, and many African countries don't have this, but there should be a Zambian PAC. It's a political action committee, for lack of a better word, or a Zambian lobbyist that would promote Zambia. So therefore, if there's going to be four small African democracies, it could be five small African democracies, and that fifth one is Zambia.
Zambia, yes. 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 That's a very true. If I may ask you, Dr. Patrick, you also mentioned how the district programs. A lot of us, actually, Dr. Patrick, for your own information, when I went to Zambia, I was explaining to people the situation in Lukulu. What is in Lukulu? What is in Mpolokoso?
Yes.
A lot of people in Lusaka were like, "Ah,
right.
And these are Zambia. These are Zambia." How then? I don't know how to put this question, but I'll put it anyway. You're bragging when you're putting out these words. How do people look at you?
Well, I tell you how the Zambians in the diaspora, Zambians look at you. They look at you proudly,
okay,
with a smile on your face. When there's nothing wrong with bragging.
There's nothing wrong.
The problem is if because we have to be humble in our bragging. There are ways to brag because we have to always balance it. In the United States, and living in the United States, you and I, and living in Canada, and living in Europe, we all know of the bad things that we have in our countries.
Yes.
But when we go abroad, we do not talk about the bad things.
No.
We say, oh, the United States is wonderful. Oh, my goodness, if you want some gold, you just go outside and take a pan and scoop up the gold and you put it in your pocket and you're a millionaire. Oh, don't worry about it. It never snows in the United States. Sunshine 360 days. Oh, my goodness, I can wear anything I want. I can buy anything. We always talk of we have been acculturized in the sense of Madison Avenue thinking. We're always promoting the United States. And rightfully so. And we should do the same thing for Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
We should promote it. If we don't do it, no one will do it. I go back to what I mentioned earlier concerning the districts. Zambia Blog Talk Radio has educated me, and I stand to reason many people that listen to the program, about the various districts and what the districts have. If you go over each district, each positive offering of each district, everyone would be proud of Zambia.
Yes.
But in order to be proud of Zambia, we also have to look at the underbelly of Zambia and work on that.
Yes, yes, I agree. I received a lot of messages from people around there, especially those who are on Facebook. So Roger, the programs you guys have brought have really educated us. Even if we are Zambians, we never knew these things existed in Zambia. Cashew nuts in Kalabo, you know, name the province.
Yes,
it gives us pride, and I think a need for us to revisit that and how we can promote that kind of message, Dr. Patrick.
That's right.
Eureka
is out there, just let Eureka know we're coming her way.
Yes.
Because
yes.
She's put together, she started to put together a lot of the one-pagers.
Yes.
And we'll probably need her assistance to continue with that. And once those one-pagers are up and running, oh, my goodness. The only thing you have to do is just and pull out a one-pager. Oh, you're talking about Lukulu? Oh, let me tell you about Lukulu. that's what we do.
Yes, yes. Yeah. No, it is something we need to rally behind. If it is money which is required for us maybe to put a lot of effort on that, I think it is one area as far as this radio is concerned we have to go back to.
Yes.
Okay. Equal Time has spent 30 minutes on China and gone back. If you want to listen to our old programming, you go to Google, Zambia Block Talk Radio, Namwe District, you say Mpolokoso, it will come up, and then you can listen to the old presentations, which was done by district secretaries. We've been to Kawambwa. We've been to Chama District, we've been to Lundazi, we've been to Kasempa, with Siavonga, which is there's, we've been everywhere. We've
Roger.
Been
everywhere.
Yes.
Roger. Roger. Yes. We've been to Chibombo, we've been to Capri Mposi, we've been to Mukusi, we've been to Chama District, Lundazi, Kawambwa, Manza, Chilubi, Chinsali, Mbala, Mpulungu, Kabompo, Kasimpa, Solwezi, Zambezi, Ititsi, Mazabuka, Monze, Sivonga, Kalambo, Kayoma, Lukulu, Shamgombo.
Yes, yes. We've been places, Dr. Patrick. It's impressive. And even when I went back home, it was very, very easy for me to go back to Kasempa. The man,
yes,
I met there, it was like even he knew me. I was Roger, oh, on the Block Talk Radio. Again, like yesterday, we did a little bit of Kalabo, Dr. Patrick. Time allowing, I want to visit some of these places. And it's very true, even to those who are going to be listening, it makes them want to go to some of these places when they hear the story.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Okay. So Dr. Patrick put a quick one there for everyone. amazing. Just amazing. We'll go to Dr. Musanje, you changed your numbers when I was just opening up your mic. You had something to say.
Yes, I thought that maybe you have moved beyond the China issue.
Okay, you had something to contribute on China.
Yes, I wanted to give my Tungwe contribution on China.
Okay, if you can do it quickly, very, very quickly, your Tungwe, and then maybe you had something to say, which you and I were exchanging. I don't know if you want to bring it up today, and then we can discuss it as well. Go ahead, Dr. Musanje.
Yes, on China, I think our relationship with China is based on a non-aligned concept that we, as a developing country, Zambia, we are going to get the best wherever we get the best. Be it China, the United States, Russia, or Cuba. We are going to do that, and that is what exactly the former president, Dr. Kaunda, started with. You know, our relationship with China started with Tazara, as far as my memory is. They built the Tazara railroad line, and the pipe oil pipeline. Now, you know the history of our problems with the oil when after the UDI. Now, that's a lot of history, which some of you may not know, but the Chinese have been at our help for a long time. They later on came and built the Mulungishu textiles. They were producing Chitenge materials over there, but now they have expanded to even building roads. And some of our students have been educated in China. We have Chinese medical trained students who are now doctors working in Zambia. So we have quite a very good relationship. what I like to happen is that now that the Chinese are a lot in Zambia, they need to respect our labor laws. As you know, at Mamba Colliers in the Southern Province,
yes,
a Chinese was killed. A Chinese. Yeah, they were killed. Now, I think that was the reason why these people were not in good terms with President Sata. But now, let me not use the word that he has been bought. Now he's going to China. I think they have realized that he's a very tough man, so they are going to be respecting our laws. One of the things that we like about China is that they are helping to do all these projects without making too many demands. For example, we Africans, I can generally say, is that we don't like these issues of gay and lesbian. Those are American issues, but we really don't understand them very well. And I think we need to be respected in our own way of the fact that we prefer a woman to have a relationship with a man, not a man having a relationship with another man, a woman having a relationship with another woman. At that level of what is termed as I don't know whether it's I don't want to use the word, but I hope you understand what I'm trying to get at. These other sometimes you cannot get help from the United States because what they say they call it human rights. Some of the human rights are not actually rights in our countries, and we want to keep it that way. So I think what we should just do is that make sure that these Chinese investments are in real things. We should not let the Chinese come and run chicken businesses. You know, we should leave the chicken businesses to Zambians. I mean, there are a lot of Zambians who can run chicken farms. So otherwise, I think I have mixed feelings about the Chinese help, and I just wanted to air some of the things that we have. And then before I complete, let me mention that the Chinese arrested a Zambian. Her name was Mary Musialike, for drug possession in China, and she was sentenced to death. We fought for that lady. Some of us from behind the scenes, we actually did something, but finally she was released. But the Chinese have very strict rules, but when you break their laws, I think maybe we don't have anything to do. But when they break our laws in Zambia, they should also face the same kind of treatment. Now, these Chinese who killed a Zambian, they are back in China now. They were released, or they were given bail, whatever happened. But there was some bribing to get them out of the country.
Some arrangement. Okay.
Yes.
Dr. Musanje. Let me go, unless, Valukuku, if you had a different a submission to make, I would like to ask Dr. Patrick about this question of our culture and being linked to aid, how it will go. Valukuku, do you have any...
I appreciate what Dr. Musanje has said, and that the Chinese have
been there, you know, for us when we needed them. I'm still okay with that, but I'm skeptical because, you know, nobody does anything for anybody for nothing.
For free, for nothing, no.
We have to figure out what's the motive behind this. And then after we know that, then we can handle it. But I would like to see an exit strategy, you know, like where does it end? When do they go back? When do we get developed? And then, they are, you know, we can run our own affairs or we can run our own business. But if it's an open season, it's tricky. You know, when you look at the British when they came to Africa, I mean, they were building towns and so on. They were not building those towns for us. You know, they were building for themselves, for the settlers.
Yes.
You know, it never occurred to them that someday we would fight for independence. You know, it was a shock for them when we started fighting for independence. You know, that's what, you know. So even when the Chinese are building roads and everything, you know, we need to know where is it going to end. You know, and until we have that, you know, nailed down, I'm not very comfortable with it.
Okay. Titus, you've been here quite a while. I'm sure you've grasped what is happening. Others don't have any, but the Chinese story here requires us our full attention. Titus, do you have anything?
About the Chinese, yes, I can contribute. I'm for the idea of empowering Zambians to partner with Chinese on most of about more than 50% of whatever is dealing in investment for Zambia.
Just on that, before you go very far. Now, China, from what I understand, I think I even saw the bank which they have brought in Zambia, access especially to Chinese. The Chinese nationals, they can go in that bank and get money at a very, very low rate, concessions, unbelievable, so the Chinese can start business. If we were to say as a nation, for you to do business here, to do a road, the construction, you are going to have partnership with the Zambians. Where do our people get the money from to partner? Which right now they don't have to buy equipment to do the roads and everything. Where are they going to get that half to do the partnering?
I would like to suggest that the first thing, you can selectively pick some Zambians that are ready to do business on a bigger level, and you can go through a chief, request for land, and empower the Zambian to control that land for the project that is going to be done. So a Zambian will be empowered with that land that the Chinese needs to buy. I don't care whether you get the money from Bank of China. The reason I'm saying this, if you check, I personally had visited the nickel mine on Munali Hills, which you guys should know about. It was first owned by the Australians, then it was bought by the Chinese, and then, sorry to say, that is not functioning right now. Now, in that setting, you could have, when the Chinese came, they would have picked the money from Bank of China in Zambia, in Osaka. And if they set out, if they were partnered with somebody in Zambia, then when they set out, a Zambian still owns those mines instead of having security people checking up, and you are spending more money. The government has to sustain what infrastructure is on those mines. So it's a cost that they have to do, an unforeseen one, and for whatever reason, which I don't know. All I'm saying is you can go with money from Zanaco to China. I don't think, ask Enoch Mundia who is in China. You cannot just start rearing chickens and anything there in China. You're going to find there are some regulations there that you may have to partner with a Chinese person there. So the first thing that you should be done is to empower a Zambian. This is where the government, if you request, you can request and make sure that you are going to develop the Zambian land. I think a chief should have more faith in a Zambian person to develop the land than a Chinese foreign person who is going to set out and go. Nickel okay. Mine sit in Chief Nalwama's area with Gary Nkomba, the MP from Mazabuka. Both of them don't have anything. The thing is sitting dormant there. And where is the money that came from Bank of China? Where are the Chinese people?
Okay.
So
okay.
If you had partnered the Zambian would still be owning those things. If you set out, thank you for the money from Bank of China, the Zambians are still empowered. You can figure out what to do next.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Titus. Thank you. Thank you for that submission. Let me go back to Dr. Patrick in regards to what Dr. Musanje submitted here. Our culture may be switched to certain things, and we need help. We need aid. According to Hillary Clinton, they are trying to attach that aid with some conditions. And probably this is where China is becoming a little bit handy. China is giving us no conditions attached. Some of the aspects of the conditions which are being attached to this aid, Dr. Patrick, has to do with our own culture. We may have to begin to accept something which may be, which is not widely acceptable in our culture. But I tell my friends at the same time, the gay community are taxpayers in the United States of America. So if we as a nation are going to accept that money, we are accepting it. It's coming from those people as well. So what is the balancing act? What should we do as recipients of aid, be it from the United States or from China? Because we are going to learn very, very soon what the Chinese wants.
We should not accept aid. That's with the same premise of accepting handouts. African countries should no longer be in a position to accept aid or look for aid. African countries should go into a business partnership. If I own a home and you own a home, and someone knocks on our door and say they would just like to move into our house, their intentions is to get the oil under our homes, but they would like to come into our house and build our house. Immediately, you set conditions down. So anyone that is going into Zambia, whether to build a road, to build a bridge, Chinese or the United States or the EU, they are looking for something. Indians, they are looking for something. Whether they're looking for mineral resources, they're looking for gold, diamonds, they're looking for timber, whatever, they are looking for something in return. Some may have no restrictions to what they want to build in the country. Some may have restrictions. But this is what you do. It's what we did on Zambia Block Talk Radio when we covered Sivonga. And remember, they were building a dam there, and we went into the SDGs of how long it's going to take, whose money is it coming from, who's going to be involved in it. Well, we should do that on all future projects. If China wants to build a dam, you say, well, is it going to be a 3-year, 4-year dam, and are you going to train Zambians to take over the dam when you leave? Are you going to train Zambians to build a bridge, that you're building? Are they going to be employed? What type of conditions are you going to set? The major thing is they want to come into the country. And if they want to come into the country, then therefore they have to go by the standards put down by the Zambian government. You don't sell land. What you want to do is you want to lease the land. And you lease the land under these conditions. You have to build X amount of roads. You have to build X amount of schools. You have to employ X amount of individuals. Now, when it comes to social mores of a particular country, do not be confused with the social mores in the United States with the capital that's being brought to another country. It would stand to reason that U.S. Steel, if they wanted coal and iron out of Zambia, they're not going to bring the philosophy of homosexuality with them there. The only thing they're concerned with is getting that coal and iron. In the United States, what's going on in the United States with respect to homosexuality is not the man, a man and a woman relationship. The contention that's being evolved is the rights of an individual, the civil rights of an individual. Many of the African American community, we are heterosexuals. A lot of us are heterosexuals. Most of us are heterosexual, man and a woman. But we also can appreciate that if a homosexual want to marry and get the benefits of the marriage, that's their business. But we're not going to impose on them how we feel, and they shall not impose on us how they feel. And a lot of problems arises where we think of, well, if a homosexual is going to move into our neighborhood, they're going to influence our children. So the question is, do we move or do we prevent them from coming into our neighborhood? So there's a lot of things going on there. It's just that belief is not going to be transported to another country. That sexual moray is not going to be transported to another country, because the other country will know. They have a social cultural background, a social cultural standing, whereas you talk to the potential partner and they're going to bring employment to the country. If they're going to bring homosexuality into a country, then they will know up front that this is not accepted. So we can do a lot with respect to whether or not you're importing a social condition or you're importing economics. And that you can set out. You can set aside and you can monitor it, because, of course, it's your country that it's being brought into. So and that's much different than that business partnership that Titus was talking about is correct. You iron it out, exactly what's in that business partnership, as opposed to someone coming in having money in their pocket and someone is saying, well, please give us some money, give us some aid. He says, well, yeah, I'll give you some aid, but this is what you have to do. No. If someone's coming into your country, you say, oh, so you want to build a bridge. Why do you want to build a bridge? Well, actually, what I want to do is I want to build a bridge from this district to that district so I can get to your copper. Say, oh, right, you do. Right. That's what you want. All right. Well, if you want to get to the copper, how many Zambians are you going to be employed? And I'm not talking about first-level employment. I'm talking about management. So that when you leave, because you guys are going to leave, you're not going to stay here on the land, exploiting the land forever and ever and ever. You guys are going to leave. You're going to leave in 6 or 7 years. But when you leave, we'll have Zambians that can run the operation. We don't want a condition that's similar to the condition of colonialism, whereas you go into a country, an African country, you build the country up, but it's operated by the Europeans. So when there's a disagreement, the Europeans leave, and they leave the city, and they leave the industry in shambles because no one knows how to run it. It's just like the example that I gave with the Chinese scientists on the instrument. The Chinese didn't let anyone operate the scientific instrument. So when that Chinese individual scientist was finished, they left, and no one knew how to operate the instrument. So it's the same thing. If you're going to build a bridge, you're going to build a house, you're going to build a dam, if you're going to build any business development in the country, you must train the Zambians to operate and own the system when you leave, because you're going to leave. Don't think you're going to stay here forever.
Okay, that's very true.
One more thing
yes.
About finances. Remember you had asked the question, well, many of the Zambians may not have matching finances.
Right.
The matching finances is your entry into Zambia. The Zambians don't have to have the money because they want something from Zambia. So if
that's
you
correct.
Want something from Zambia, you pay for the training, you pay for the development, you pay for the system in Zambia that needs to be done. And Zambians will identify Zambians that have trained, that have skills. It could be in the diaspora or it could be the Zambians in country because there are experts. You know the Zambian diaspora, Zambians know that they are experts there. They know how to run things. The only thing you need, you have the manpower. You have the skill sets. So, therefore, the only thing you have to do is, okay, you're an expert in engineering. You're going to be the person that's going to take over this company, this Chinese company, when they leave. Oh, you're an expert in forestry. You're going to take over the forestation and the shipment of timber when they leave.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Patrick. These are big questions. They may not easily be answered in one session like this, but we'll be sending this kind of information abroad so people can hear what our feelings are. But so we have very few minutes remaining here. Please go ahead. We have about 3 minutes.
I'll just take a minute. Let me just add my two cents thought. As a Christian, you know, and for us who have been in this country and we read history, you know, for me, I'll stick to Western countries. We have come a long way with our friends. And if we can be allies in the future, that would be great, you know. As a Christian, when the first missionary came to, I know this history is complicated and there's so many mistakes that I've done, you know. Someone to bring you a scripture, someone to bring you a word of God, that means they love you. You know, and especially for us Zambians, you know, when Barham came to Zambia, sat in that his place, translated the hymns to our language in Bemba, you know, that has touched me so much because of reading the scripture and reading the story of these people and then going to church with them and see where they've been, where they come from and where they've been. Because you remember they came from Europe too because of persecution, you know, and stuff like that. There's people who love Africa, you know, and who have, they attach themselves to that continent. And then when we look at our brothers here too, you know, and then we can compare with China. Some of us have been to their restaurants and the way they treat us, you know, and stuff like that, and to see. And there's two giants here, the Western countries and the China. Are they doing it to get back to the Western world, or they're doing it to benefit Africa, you know? But for me, I'll stick to the Western countries because we have come a long way with these people, you know? And I like the way they live, you know, their history, you know? So
yes.
I think for me, I'll stick with the Western world.
Okay. Mr. Luchembe of California, his health allowing him, will be on Bridging the Gap next week to tell us his story. And then we'll follow, prepare to come with a submission on Equal Time. This has been a good expose, if you like, looking at the Chinese. I hope we can begin to open up our friends' eyes back home to see what is happening in our backyards. Have a great weekend, everyone, and thank you, Brother Gregory Chingwe, for sharing with us your story, and we hope you join us in other shows coming. Have a great week, everyone, and God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Roger. God bless you.